Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
Spread Your Love by Black Rebel Motorcycle Club from the 2001 debut album. That was their debut album.
I know. And it was halfway down into the album as well, this track. I remember hearing it for the first time and I was completely blown away. It's that bass at the beginning.
No, you don't say.
Well, you know, how we're all in love in bass in this house. You know, I'm in love with it. You know, I'm in love with you and I'm in love with what you do.
Oh,
and it's you know, so we talk about bass all the time, but his bass sound on it is ferocious. Now, I'm not exactly sure whether he's got a fuzz box. I suspect he has, but that is an Ampeg on really loud. And he uses 8x10 cabinets and a short scale bass.
It's magnificent, isn't it?
Mm. A great group, but it's so thrashy. You know, everyone, they come in, they like bashing it, they bash it, but they're really careful about how they produce the music.
Yeah.
BRMC, you know, on the later albums, they do a lot of overdubs and overlays of different guitar sounds and stuff, but it's still very thick. And the guitar player, Peter Hayes, he plays with ridiculously heavy strings. He's got like 12,000 strings, which is really heavy, like medium gauge, like Pete Townsend used to use. So you don't hear him soloing a lot of bending. It's all about his rhythm, you know. And my goodness me, what a racket.
It feels like any angst you've got in your soul, it kind of takes it away for you. It does a really good job at getting all that kind of tension out of you. The song sort of is cathartic, isn't it?
It sure is. It is. And I just love the whole sound, the feel, the attitude of Battle of the Motorcycle Club as well. Because we had a track on a few weeks ago now. Yeah. And, you know, and every time it makes me feel just dirty and rock and roll. It's the ultimate sort of rock and roll sound to me, that, you know.
Yeah, really? I know what you mean. Do you know the bass guy, Robert Levon Bean?
Mm.
Well, for the first couple of albums they released, and this was their debut album, he actually, his name on the albums is Robert Turner. Because he didn't want he wanted to try and not be connected to his dad, who was Michael Bean of the Call.
Is that right?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that.
I got you. See, what I was quite interested with these guys, because to me this is a boys' band, and so therefore I wasn't interested in them. But since I've got bass in my soul, I love them.
Yeah,
and it's just completely connected me into this kind of music. And what happened with these guys? So they were influenced. Their first couple of albums are sort of classic hard rock influences, like Led Zepp, The Verve, Jesus and the Mary Chain. And by 1999, the band had recorded a polished 16-track demo CD, and they'd relocated to Los Angeles. And there was KCRW, which is a Santa Monica-based radio station, gave them their first airplay. But what's interesting is that interest spread across the Atlantic, and BBC Sheffield named their demo Record of the Week. And how blinking obscure is that?
Sheffield.
Exactly.
Well, there I see the hard men from Sheffield.
That could well be.
How much? Too bloody much.
So I love the fact that Radio Sheffield got in there and recognised them. And even Noel Gallagher was saying that they were his new favourite band at the time. And they had quite a few offers, but they signed this deal with Virgin, really, back in 2000. But I just think it's fantastic. And they've released now 8 studio albums, and their latest was Wrong Creatures, and they released that in January this year.
Yeah, they changed the drummer, aren't they? Because originally it was Nick Yeager, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And now, is there a woman on drums?
Lee Shapiro.
That's right, yeah. 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 And it's really interesting seeing them live, though, because really, they look exactly the same as they did 18 years ago.
Fantastic.
They still wear the black leather jackets. They all look very, just generally morose and miserable, but they rock the shit out of it. And I went to see them at Leeds Festival. And I was right at the front, right, literally at the front by the crash barrier there. And I had our eldest son with me, James. Joe was there as well, but it was at the back. And I have never heard volume like it. It was like a wall of sound. And I couldn't, all my internal organs were moving because I was right in front of the bass player, you know? And it was like fierce. And when they fired into this, everybody's going berserk. And it was in one of the smaller tents at Leeds then. It was like really intimate. There was, you know, probably less than 1,000 people in there. But it was absolutely rammed, you know? Great stuff.
Tell me where, and if she says to you,
The Yardbirds, Heart Full of Soul, released 4th of June 1965, 3 months after For Your Love.
And both of those songs were written by Graham Goldman, who went on to form 10cc.
Oh.
Do you know what I've just found out as well? That Graham used to work at a gentleman's outfitters near Silford Docks.
No.
When he was about 19, and he really was inspired by the Beatles, so he thought he'd have a dabble at songwriting. So he was touting songs round. And the song eventually got to the Yardbirds.
Well, you know something? I didn't know that. That's incredible. I didn't know he'd started that early because 10cc, yeah. Of course, because when I was doing a lot of sessions down at Strawberry Studios and Yellow 2 in Stockport, because that was their studio, you know?
Of
the
course.
Old Helios console and all. Oh, God, beautiful. And, so, you know, those guys used to bump into quite a lot. Richard Cream and Low Cream and all those. That's his brother. And, yeah.
That's cool. Amazing, isn't it? Now, what really gets me about the Yardbirds is that you've got this band that you've got. They're renowned for starting the careers of three of rock's most famous guitarists. You've got Clapton, Jimmy Page and Jeff Beck.
Indeed.
All having been members of the Yardbirds. What is that about?
I know. It's incredible. And apparently all these guys came within a very close radius in London from each other. It must have been something in the bloody water down there.
I'll tell you what I really like about that era as well, though, and I have noticed that some musicians, and especially later on, musicians don't hang out the way they used to. I don't know whether it's because people aren't jamming the same, but what really strikes me about that era is people used to get up and jam, and it was all part of the musicianship of the time, and I think now people don't jam so much. I think they're a bit scared of it.
Well, and also there's not the venues to do it.
No.
But, you know, people are just not doing it anymore. And it's very sad because, you know, the only way I think you can really learn to play an instrument and improvise is by jamming with people that you've never met before and jamming. Not open mic nights where, you have bands just turning up, you know, and they'll play it as a band. They'll do two numbers, three numbers as a band, and then another band will get up. I'm talking about just people stepping in. We did a lot of it when we were in Valencia, didn't we?
We did. It was quite frightening, actually.
Yeah.
But once you realise that actually people are supporting you and it's okay to make mistakes and to just explore your instrument and listen. I think the main thing I learned was just being confident enough to just listen and react and trust, like you always tell me, to use the force, don't
That's
you?
That's right. Because you know, and if you can sing it in your head, right, you will actually be able to play it. Eventually, the connection comes between your head and your actual fingers, you know, and that's the thing. But that song, of course, it's all about the fuzz guitar played by Jeff Beck.
Fuzz.
Fuzz. Because they were shipped one of the first tone benders, which is like one of the original fuzz boxes. And I was reading an article in Premier Guitar and watching a video, one of the rig rundowns, which I'm afraid I sadly watch quite a few of them, of Johnny A, who was until recently in the Yardbirds. And he instead is using now an Analog Man Sunbender Mark IV. To replicate the very thin sound on this record. And if you look at the rig rundown or listen to it or watch it, you know, you will see it and it is exactly the same. It's fantastic. But, you know, that little line, it really gives something to that whole song. Because the song's quite poppy, you know, but what it does, it adds that sort of dirty, bluesy thing, you know. And it's a great line.
Do you think that they were like the Yardbirds contributed to the birth of psychedelic music? Because that's what they're saying, and that they kind of sowed the seeds of punk rock and prog rock and heavy metal.
Yeah, I mean they were really different because if you listen to it, it wasn't like blues. Like the Rolling Stones, like they took on the mantle of blues. Really, they absorbed it and then anglicised it.
Yeah.
And then, of course, shipped it back to America, you know, after the blues explosion and everything happened. But these guys, they were doing something different. They were real songs and real cool, like Shapes of Things. You know, that's a great song.
Yeah.
And it was, but it doesn't sound blues. And this isn't blues.
No.
But it had a tremendous, you know, impact on the later stuff, which I'm sure Clapton, you know, because when he went on from the Yardbirds and Jeff Beck, if you listen, they were developing on that theme, you know.
So really what it boils down to then is people experimenting with the sound of things.
Well, yeah. You see, this is the whole thing. And, you know, the album that we've, you know, recorded 2 years ago now, Blueberry Pie, you know, we tried to capture that original sound. And, you know, hopefully we succeeded. A lot of people seem to think so, which is great. But it's the sound. The music might be different. What we wrote is different. You know, the actual sound is, it gives you a feeling of that time. And I just love that sound.
Led Zeppelin, The Ocean, from their fifth studio album, Houses of the Holy. That was released on the 28th of March, 1973, on Atlantic Records.
I think it's my favourite Led Zeppelin album. Oh, shock horror. Because, of course, three was Since I've Been Loving You, and, you know, two, A Whole Lot of Love, and one, well, I really adore, because that really kicked it all off, you know. But the depth of this record is fantastic. I love the Rain song. And, you know, that's just a fantastic, beautiful song. And they were using a lot more production techniques in this. I think Jimmy Page really got his production act together, because did they have their own studios at home?
Yeah, and Jobbo Jones, they both installed home studios. So they came into the studio environment in a much more prepared and an almost experimental way as well. So a lot of the arrangements and ideas they kind of played around with.
Well, you can tell. Of course, the unsung hero, everybody talks about Jimmy Page, you know, he's an amazing producer, you know. His guitar playing went from inspirational to total shit live. Shit. And I'm going to say that word again. Shit. Because sometimes you listen to him and I don't know what he was on, but it was awful, you know. But there were times of utter genius and brilliance, you know. In this, at the end, you know, he's doing that solo. There's a few mistakes and it's a bit clunky, you know, but it's beautiful. You know, and because what he did and what I like about Jimmy Page, he just goes for it. He goes for the notes. He goes for it regardless. And, you know, sometimes you make a mess of it and sometimes you don't. But the unsung hero, again, John Paul Jones, the bass player. But, of course, he's not just the bass player. On this, he played grand piano, mellotron, organ synthesizer, synthesized piano, synthesized bass, and backing vocals. And I think he swept the studio up with a brush of his backside at the end.
Yeah. He does everything, that guy, doesn't he? He's completely and utter genius.
Yeah, he, you know, because he really, you know, he gives so much. Because, the you know, the actual tone of Jimmy Page and his riffs and his production, the marvellous, you know, vocal of Rob Plant, and the incredible drumming, you know, and power of Bonzo, you know, which you can hear at the beginning there, because he goes, it was just under my, when I was doing the end of that last piece, we'd done four already and now we're steady, you know, it's great, you know, it's really good. But together they were mighty. But it was John Paul Jones, I think, that knitted it all together with some real glue of musical brilliance, you know.
And what I like about that as well, they used the Rolling Stones mobile truck again and went down to, I love this, Stargrove, yeah. Mick Jagger's pad, Stargrove. And then they recorded some tracks later at Olympic and also at Electric Lady Studios in New York when they were touring the US. But now there's a couple of things here. I was reading about, you know, sometimes as well, we all take it for granted, even I do now, about Led Zeppelin. But I read a beautiful piece about the band the other day, and they said what the Beatles were to the 60s, Led Zeppelin were to the 70s, a band so successful and innovative, they wound up creating the prism through which the entire epoch was seen.
Yeah. You know, I mean, they were gods, absolute gods. Because, you know, I'd started playing guitar when I was 16, you know, and that was 1974. So I actually picked up a guitar in 1974. So this had only been out a year. So you can imagine. I was reveling in it, you know. I just couldn't believe it. I was going back through all the records and learning all the stuff. And I learned everything I could. Of course, all the ones that were in open tuning, I actually learned in normal tuning. Impossible to play. And I wondered, my God, he's a great guitar player, this guy. Absolutely fantastic, because I wasn't using the right tunings. My fingers were like, you know, 4 foot long, you know, trying to get around all the notes. Ridiculous. Anyway, I know doing the correct tuning, it's not all that difficult. Oh, dear.
asphalt was a lake, and the sand, it was a grayish shade of blue. Spirits held desire, wise, they did admire the evening that we only thought we knew. Thank you.
You're listening to The Supertone Show with Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band.
And that was Jonathan Wilson, Desert Raven, from the album Gentle Spirit, the first official studio album released in August 2011 in the UK and a month later in the US on the wonderful Bella Union Records.
Do you know where we've got this on vinyl? And I love this album. Do you know how I find it? Because of the paper that it's made out of. Because it's got that brown kind of packaging, that like a raw brown
card
that it's made from. I love this album.
It's a double album as well.
I just think it's exceptional.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Well, I mean, Uncut Magazine went mad over it, didn't they? Did they make him Artist of the Year or something? Mojo's fourth best album of that year. Simon Raymond, when he met, apparently, Jonathan Wilson, that's the reason why Jonathan Wilson released the album, because he wanted to release it on a really cool label. And I think Bella Union are probably one of the coolest, really.
Yeah, they are, aren't they?
we're really cool. But, you know, that song is really harking back to that old Laurel Canyon thing, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. He's obviously listened to a lot of Stephen Stills. Great production values, very smooth sound. It's smooth in the British sound, because the American sound was always like sophisticated, and the British is a bit raw, you know, a bit edgy and raw. But this, it washes over you in that lovely guitar line, that descending line. It's just beautiful.
Jonathan played all the instruments on that, you know, on that track.
No.
Yeah, everything.
Wow.
And what I really like was when I was listening to the bass line, and I like the way he just keeps it simple. And, you know, because sometimes that's all you need to do. It's just the groove that he had with it, and it was mesmerising. It just carried on repeating, and it built up an intensity, and you don't realise it because he didn't really change up that much.
No.
And that's what I really love about that song. It just allowed you to gently gets you, basically.
Well, it's beautifully produced and mixed with him and Tom Monaghan, of course, who's a, I wouldn't say he's a mate of ours, but we do know him because he works with Mary Epworth.
The wonderful Mary Epworth. We saw her at the Castle Hotel in Manchester, didn't we?
We certainly did, yeah.
She's great.
Sister of Paul Epworth.
That's irrelevant.
It is.
Mary's amazing.
Yeah, well.
Just going back to when we actually saw Jonathan Wilson in support Neil Young in Biarritz.
We did.
And that's the thing, is I didn't like him live because he just looked off his face and he looked greasy and smelly. And I couldn't sense his presence. He was like a skanky, greasy thing stood there. And I'm saying this quite honestly. And I wanted to connect with him because I feel that he's such a... The music from this album was so beautiful and I wanted to sense his beauty.
Mm.
And I don't know what happened that day, but he wasn't there. It felt like he wasn't there on stage, really. So,
well, I got him. He had that Jesus look about him, didn't he? You know, that sort of, yeah.
He did. You know. One of the perceptions of what Jesus looked like, yeah.
Indeed. Let's not go there.
But what I love was that, so this album, though, was recorded at he moved into Laurel Canyon.
Mm.
And it wasn't about... What's interesting, it wasn't about kind of reviving this Laurel Canyon vibe thing that he had. He just needed someone to park his truck, apparently. So this is what it was saying.
I don't believe that, but anyway.
Exactly. Well, he was credited with revitalising the Laurel Canyon music scene. Because what he started was basically organising some private jams.
Yeah.
So he's renting a house out there. So you've got, like, people from the Chili Peppers, you've got Graham Nash, and I think different people, all different musicians were going in jamming.
The Black Crowes as well was
exactly, Chris Robinson.
Yeah.
So I think they started these jams off together. And I think that's really... we've got that book, Canyon of Dreams, by rock historian Harvey Kubernick. And he was saying, which I love, he says, musicians need to breathe the same air. And there was these were some of the best musicians of their generation. We're talking back now into the era of when we had Joni Mitchell and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young and Neil Young and Zappa.
Yeah, and all they all lived around there.
Googly-moogly and all that kind of stuff. You know, but you can imagine. But so basically he was just saying, yeah, and it's sort of by luck and happenstance that they jammed into this beautiful, leafy little neighbourhood, you know.
And did you know he has a Kodak console?
Is that the one in his new studio now, or is that...
Well, last time I saw him mix something, I saw pictures, because you know, with a geek, I'm terrible, and he's got a Kodak console, which is the same console that we want to buy. We do.
Exactly. Oh, that's like saying, guess who's got the chocolate bar you want, isn't it, really? But what's really interesting, and this is how the times have changed, is that he was renting this house in Laurel Canyon and he got evicted by the landlord for holding jams in the house.
Outrageous.
As Parliament and Flashlight from their album Funkin' Telecky versus the Placebo Syndrome. That was released in November 1977.
Well, if you're talking George Clinton, yeah, you're talking funk. And that is so groovy. As soon as it comes in, my neck was like a chicken after half a bar. And that is all about the bass. It's all about that Moog bass synth. It's fantastic. And those little figures, it goes, and you know, beautiful, that vibrato, and so groovy.
It sounds like there are little alien creatures talking to each other in this kind of, you know,
fierce funk. I can only imagine the amount of cannabis that smoke was smoked during that performance and various other substances,
it's the
I'm
groove,
sure.
Groove, man. I tell you what was interesting, though, is that Bootsy Collins doesn't play bass on that.
Yeah.
That he rejected the bass line. So it was Bernie Worrell that played three, maybe four mini Moogs.
Yeah, so it's keyboard bass.
Yeah.
Which became very, very, you know, in vogue later on, because, you know, all the synth bands were all using bass synths, you know, to create that great sound.
And do you know what? Even though it pains me, I get it.
Mm.
It's weird, isn't it? But I get that totally and utterly. It's cool with me.
Well, Gary Newman, you know, we had him on the show a few weeks ago, didn't we, with the Cars, and he said they started off as a punk band, and as soon as he heard that Moog bass synth, it changed everything for him, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a great example. And you know, and the vocals at the end as well, it's just oozing with groove.
Do you know the story about the chanting? Da 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 dee da 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 da.
I don't, but I'm sure you're going to tell me.
Well, it was actually based on a chant that a mate told him about, told Bootsy Collins about, that he'd heard at a bar mitzvah.
No.
Oh, yeah. And actually, that song is rated number 75 in Tablet Magazine's list of 100 best Jewish songs.
Fantastic. What a great story. Oh, dear. And I saw George Clinton at Glastonbury, actually. I saw him. The only time I've ever been to Glastonbury, the next time I go back, we're going to be playing. That's my vow.
Yeah, you know. Of course.
And but I saw him, and he was on stage, and they couldn't get him off. They actually had to turn the PA off, and you could hear the monitors. And
really?
Eventually, they had to turn the monitors off, yeah, because he just wouldn't leave
the
stage.
Was he like Ken Dodd?
Yeah, well, I think he was the funk version of Ken Dodd, yeah, with his Diddy Men, yeah.
But that was quite interesting. Well, George Clinton, he just seems like a bit of he seems troubled to me, but in a fun way, as in, you know, I feel like he's really intense and incredible creative.
Yeah.
And what I love about this whole album as well, this one with Parliament, was that it's a loose concept album, and it was warning the listener of falling into the placebo syndrome, which, according to George Clinton, is consumerism and listening to disco music, which he saw as a simplification of funk music, an attempt to gain commercial success.
Isn't life strange? A turn of a page can read like before. Can we ask for more? Each day passes by. How hard man will try, the sea will not taste. You know it makes me want to cry. love strange, a word we arrange with no thought or care. Maker of despair, each breath that we breathe, with love we must breathe to make us as one. We know it makes me want to cry, cry, cry. Wish I could be in your
Moody Blues. Isn't Life Strange, from their eighth album, Seventh Sojourn, released as a single on the 21st of April 1972, 6 months before the album.
My goodness. Do you know, before I met you, I didn't really know the Moody Blues at all. I knew about Nights in White Satin, but I'd never really knew any of their other music, really. And it's been an absolute gift. And when I was looking into this song and just looking at the history of it, I asked myself, you know, if you don't really know the Moody Blues, when we recommend people, you know, do listen to the Moody Blues. And so, who are they? Well, they formed in Birmingham in 1964, and they're first known for playing R&B music. And their second album, Days of Future Past, was released in 1967. And it's one of the first successful concept albums. It was a fusion of rock and classical music. And it was a real landmark and established the band as pioneers in the development of art rock and prog rock. Mm. They have sold 70 million albums worldwide. They've been awarded 18 platinum and gold LPs. And they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2018. So there you go. That is the magnitude of the band that we're talking about.
And that's only 5 million less than Aretha Franklin sold. They are. So
crikey.
That's, yeah, so that's how big they are. They're huge. And you listen to Queen and you listen to Brian May and then you listen to this. Now, bearing in mind, you know, Queen was a lot later on after this. He wholesale has ripped off Justin Hayward's guitar parts. The fuzz guitar in that is breathtakingly good. He's one of the most underrated guitar players out there. He's got a fantastic voice. The song is great. It's got sensitivity. It's a great lyric. It, you know, Tony Clark, who looks like a bloody accountant, he had a suit on, who was like he was an extra member of the band, right? He was the Moody Blues' George Martin.
Yeah.
He produced it. But you knew who actually did some of the arrangements on this as well for the Mellotron and stuff. They call it the Chamberlain because it was a precursor to the Mellotron.
Yeah.
And that was Ann Dudley, who ended up playing with In the Art of Noise and did a lot of work with Trevor Horn.
Really?
Yes.
Blinkin' heck.
There we are.
I want to talk more, but we can't because it's the end of this week's
show.
No! Yeah, it is.
Holy cow!
So, look, well, thank you so much for joining us on the Supertone Show this week. If you want to contact us, we're on Instagram as Starlight Campbell, Twitter at Susie and Simon, that's S-U-Z-Y, and, of course, Facebook.
Yeah, and the show's available on Mixcloud, Spotify, iTunes and iHeartRadio. So please tell your friends.
Indeed. And we're going to play you out today with a song by a guy called Barry Ryan from Leeds.
And it's quite it's a very dramatic thing. And we were going through a record collection the other day and we put it on and we thought, flipping it, we're going to have to play. It's a fantastic song.
It is. And it was released in 1968 by MGM. And it was number two in the UK. And get this, it sold 3 million copies worldwide.
Holy shit.
I'm there, and heaven knows I hope she goes. I find it hard to realize that love was in her eyes. It's dying now. She knows I'm crying now. Sun that makes the day, that lights the way. And when that star goes by, I'll hold it in my hands and cry, her love is mine, my sun will shine. I'd love to care. but she's not there. And when I find you, I'd be so kind, you'd want to stay. I know you'd stay.